Welcome to Florida.
That is the voice of New York Times bestselling author and award-winning environmental reporter Craig Pittman. My name is Chad Scott, and this is Welcome to Florida. Craig, we've been grinding hard on Big Sugar and the Everglades and some big topics, anthropology, the Underground Railroad. We're going to the Keys and talking about cruise ships. Well, we're going to take a little breather today and have some fun and kick our feet up and talk about movies and our favorite Florida movies and movies that have distinguished Florida and not distinguished Florida.
Right. So get your popcorn out.
get your popcorn ready. Before we do, though, you were back writing for the Washington Post and about something I was not aware of. I've heard of the Miami Heat, but this is a different sort of Miami Heat you were writing about.
Miami has been sort of at the forefront of climate change problems because, of course, they can see it, you know, coming up the street anytime there's a king tide. So Miami-Dade County on April 30th announced that they were appointing a chief heat officer, that this person would be in charge of trying to find ways to cope with the rising temperatures that are caused by climate change and to find ways to reach out to people who need help dealing with that, you know, because they have a lot of construction workers, agricultural people working outdoors, people who depend on the bus to get to where they're going. So they have to sit out in unshaded bus stops waiting for the bus. And she's looking at ways to try and deal with that. And it's an interesting concept and one that other cities are going to adopt. They're on their way. They haven't gotten to where Miami is yet.
The obvious answer is trees, right? I mean, does it must go beyond that. I'm guessing, but boy, it seems like there's such a simple solution to this.
She did mention trees. She said, you know, shade versus non-shade, the difference could be up to 20 degrees there, which is why I always tell people when they're new to Florida, you know, the best parking space in the lot is not the one close to the store. It's the one that's in the shade. That's the one you want. But yeah, I mean, it's that, but also dealing with the building codes, trying to come up with ways to keep houses cool without necessarily relying on air conditioning, because air conditioning just makes the problem worse. You know, you're pumping the heat outdoor from inside the house outdoors. That becomes
that's a good one. And I would imagine too, trying to take cars off the road because of the exhaust and just concrete and asphalt and hard surfaces in general reflect that heat. They soak it up. You know, you walk past a brick building in Florida at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, if it's a, you know, westerly facing wall, and put your hand on it.
It's
incredible. You know, you know, I think one of the, as people begin to think about re-engineering cities to be resilient in all kinds of ways, resilient from heat, resilient from sea level rise, different materials, more green space, trees, all of that plays a role. And a recent study came out, I saw this on Twitter, about how much less canopy there is in areas that have lower incomes. And again, this was kind of an environmental justice issue, like we were talking about last week with Big Sugar, how urban areas where a lot of poorer working class minority populations live have all of these impacts. They don't have the trees. They have more street traffic, more car traffic, more warehouses, more industrial buildings putting off, you know, smoke and heat and that sort of thing. So it's really, you know, looking at a city, I would imagine, in a holistic fashion and thinking about how do cities, and they do this remarkably, and we haven't really thought about it to this point, but how do these cities impact our health? You know, they do in any number of ways.
It's going to require basically a revolution in thinking. We're going to have to stop doing things the way we always have and not worrying about heat, and to suddenly saying, is this the best way to do it? Or can we do it in a way that makes it fit in better with the landscape and with this challenge that we're all dealing with of dealing with climate change?
Yeah. Craig wrote all about that for the Washington Post. And if you want to find all of his articles, the best way to do so, follow him on Twitter at Craig Times. You can follow me on Twitter at Chad Scott. Two D's in Chad, two T's in Scott. And that takes us to our guest this week, Susan Fernandez, Bob Ingalls. The book is Sunshine in the Dark, Florida in the Movies. This is a book that came out a while ago, Craig, but you're a movie buff, and we did an episode on TV in the fall of 2020. So it seemed appropriate that we move it over to the big screen.
Absolutely. And I'm a big fan of Florida movies in general. I love seeing Florida depicted in the movies, even though sometimes the depictions are totally, totally bizarre. And I have friends who you know, whenever we talk, we're like, remember that time that they had a movie that was supposedly set in Florida and it had mountains in the background? Tell me about how you got interested in writing about the subject of Florida and the movies.
Let me go back to a little town in Kentucky in 1959. We had decided, the whole family decided to move to Florida. There were six of us, put everything in our little student Baker and made it down here and moved from poverty to working class in a couple of years after getting here. Then I had an aunt who moved a couple of years later to Florida with her two kids on the other coast. That's the prelude to how this came about, because my aunt's daughter became a filmmaker, Allison Anders. And after making a number of films that were very widely critically acclaimed, she made a film called Things Behind the Sun in 2002. And I went to see the film. It was a story of her life, really, much of her life, based loosely on what had happened to her. She became an alcoholic and she had repressed some memories. And so the film is about her coming to terms with the memory of being raped when she was a child in Cocoa Beach. And I watched the film and I thought about her life and I thought about my life. And I had somehow identified our experience, my family's experience with Follow That Dream, the 1962 Elvis Presley movie, where the whole family moves south and makes it.
It's filmed in Citrus County, I think, right?
Yeah, up by the brand new interstate that was coming through. And her family didn't. So it was that contrast of people trying to get to Florida for various reasons and succeeding or not succeeding. And I thought, well, maybe there's other films that do this, you know, other Florida films or other characters in Florida films have had this experience. And I was surprised when I started researching to find out how many films there were and how common the themes were.
Yeah.
Bob and I were already working on another project, so we decided to switch to this project together.
Is there a number for how many movies there are about Florida?
More than 300.
Wow.
Most of them no one's ever heard of. Many of them are unavailable, like old silent movies. But we did find Library of Congress. We did find a couple of old silent ones that are really classic.
What were those?
One of those, The New Klondike, which was made in 1923. In that film, they use baseball, spring training teams that come to Florida. They use baseball as a metaphor for real estate in Florida, the real estate boom of the 20s. It's a pretty interesting film. Another one is A Florida Enchantment, which is a strange story about a woman who is very unhappy and finds a way to become happy by transforming herself into a man.
This is 1913.
Wow.
She's in up near Jacksonville, I think.
St. Augustine.
St. Augustine. And she takes a pill that transforms her into a man.
That solves all of her problems for a while.
Get bank loans and
exactly.
People respect her. That's the thing. Yeah. And then her fiance takes the pill and he becomes a woman. And what's strange about the film is that when he becomes a woman, the police go after him, you know, because you can't run down the street in a dress and a hat, you know,
as a man. Wow. And it turns out all to be a dream.
Were these some that were made back when there was a time when Jacksonville was Hollywood, right?
Yeah. Richard Norman Studios there and several other studios had filmmaking capabilities until the 20s.
But most of those were set elsewhere, Africa, Asia, wherever.
Because Florida could fill in for those other settings, right?
Right. And you had the castle there. Augustine is close by and pretty interesting. Settings. Yeah. But we didn't have mountains and we didn't have desert. So, you know, filmmakers decided to move to California.
And didn't some famous stars get their start in Jacksonville, like Valentino and Oliver Hardy?
Yeah, there were a number of them who came, especially the silent film stars, had to make their chops essentially in Florida, if not at New York.
I read somewhere that the reason they were evicted from Jacksonville is because there was an election and a new mayor came in. The old one had run on the platform of allowing the films to be made there and also who's going to keep the bordellos open.
Well, you know, those things go together sometimes.
Yeah. And people in Jacksonville were offended that the film people came in and the women all wore pants and smoked and that the film.
That's all over by the mid-20s, of course.
Oh, yeah. They would wait until everybody was in church on Sundays and then have like big car races in the streets.
California was just a better choice because they could move around from California to other states nearby and have lots of different settings. There were conflicts. After all, you know, the independent film movement started then. Pickford and others set up their own independent companies to get away from what were considered then the major studios.
Reading one of the descriptions and reviews of your book, I was interested that you explore how perceptions of Florida through the movies have changed over the years. You talk about that Follow Your Dream, Florida, as kind of a new start, a paradise, an opportunity to get a clean slate and start all over. And it morphed into kind of the seamy Scarface underbelly. How did you notice and were there any real signposts in that transition of how the image of Florida was being crafted by film?
Well, I think you can probably identify the post-World War II period from after World War II into the 70s. You had some similarities in the films with that same kind of theme. You know, Florida is a paradise. Florida's a place to be a good gold digger, you know, for good cons, for those kinds of things. But then there were a lot of crime films made too. And I think some of those were as a result of the Kefauver hearings in 52. Where they were investigating organized crime in Florida. So then these crime stories bled into the other images of Florida. And then once the independent films started being made and became more accessible, they made their characters, the independent filmmakers tend to make their characters more middle class, more relatable. So instead of having people like Betty Grable or, you know, Betty Davis or Lucille Ball, and having also aristocratic upper class characters be the focus of the film, there were more middle class characters in the films, people who were poor or middle class, who the audience could relate to. So they had different experiences, and clearly as tourists or as migration.
I loved reading that you're writing about the changing nature of the environment and how it's depicted in Florida movies, that, you know, that in some places the Everglades is like, you know, this paradise, and in others it's this hellhole full of evil monsters. The idea of the environment as a menace is kind of intriguing to me. One of my Florida bucket list items is to finally see the horror movie Frogs.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I would put that on my bucket list.
Well, it's just several people have said it is so cheesy. You have to watch it with Ray Milland and who else is in that? I forget now.
The Frogs.
Yeah. Yeah, Frogs and Ray Milland. That's the stars.
That's it.
it's like Empire, Birds, but with amphibians.
That's right. Empire of the Ants is actually a more interesting movie because it's about ants that have been mutated by some sort of experimentation, and they're eating the sugar supply. It's a very strange horror movie, but it's kind of fun.
Greg, you're talking about that idea of the Everglades as a you know, dangerous sort of menace. And in researching the episode, I came across Gary Cooper's Distant Drums, 1951, incredibly problematic description. After destroying a Seminole fort, American soldiers and their rescued companions must face the dangerous Everglades and hostile Indians in order to reach safety, a description and premise which no contemporary audience would find believable. What of that film do you look back on now and find especially cringeworthy?
You mean the Florida Westerns, like the Gary Cooper one?
That movie in particular, which clearly is portraying from the description the Seminoles as the bad guys, and here the right. You know, it's the cowboys.
All of those did. I mean, there are very few films that portray Florida's indigenous fairly. They're almost always in all films that have them as characters at all. They are savage.
Even an adaptation in 2002, there's a scene that we describe. It's a small scene, but there's a Native American who works at a landscaping company, and Meryl Streep walks up to him, and we got a picture in the book, And he reaches out and sort of strokes her blonde hair, feels her blonde hair. And it's a fairly, I don't want to say, I'm tempted to say menacing. It's certainly a...
It's creepy.
The other. Yeah. He is certainly sees her as the other and probably vice versa. There are very few recent movies in the last 30 years that have Florida movies that have Native Americans in them. And they're passing roles, certainly.
I wonder why they're being left out now.
Who's making the films? It's the filmmakers.
Who's making the films and who they see their audience as. Marketing, in a word, I guess.
What do you think is the most accurate? I mean, we talk about ridiculous portrayals of Florida and rampaging ants and frogs and all this kind of thing. What is the most accurate portrayal of Florida in a film that comes to mind for you?
We both agree.
Sunshine State?
Sunshine State.
Wow.
John Sayles, I just watched it again. Wonderful actors, everybody from Edie Falco was the lead. Angela Bassett has a big role. Mm-hmm. Just the characters.
The characters and the story, because it has all these nuanced analyses of the history of so-called development in Florida, real estate development.
And it even has a Native American.
Appropriately ends the development project.
Mm-hmm. It's a really good movie, although I have to tell you, I find Edie Falco's attempt at a cracker accent completely distracting. It's not good.
But what is a cracker accent? Come on.
It's the way I talk.
Your definition. All right.
And I talk the way the words feel good in my mouth. So,
but from the sublime to the ridiculous, when you talk about accurate representations, something like John Candy in Summer Rental, which is taking Florida from paradise to a kind of hellhole for a vacation someplace near here on the West Coast, where the beaches are overcrowded, the motels are old, it's impossible to find real seafood anyplace. It's a fairly, it was done in the 80s, I think, but it's a fairly accurate depiction of much of tourist Florida today, I think.
The 80s were kind of a golden age for Florida movies. I mean, you had that one, you had Body Heat, which was a lot of fun. Caddyshack was filmed in Florida.
80s is really the turning point from paradise to hellhole. Then you factor in that context, you didn't mention Scarface, which is early 80s. And you factor in drugs and Miami. And
independent filmmakers.
Independent filmmakers, but also commercial filmmakers, and the whole image of the state. Chambers of Commerce must have gone absolutely bonkers with this stuff.
There are movies that people don't think of as Florida movies, but do have Florida elements to them, like Citizen Kane, right? Where Kane Xanadu was supposedly built in the Everglades, but you never see him swat a mosquito.
Well, you very seldom see mosquitoes or sweat in Florida movies, you know, before the 80s.
But I think you're right. You could win a lot of trivia contests asking a simple question, where is Citizen Kane set? Yeah. And if you had asked me this a year ago, I probably would have said California, having 15 years later forgotten in Florida. The other interesting thing is we talk about Florida movies that don't have a single scene in Florida. There are a few of these, but they're about the drive to get to Florida, literally the drive to get to mm-hmm. Florida, where they're trying to escape. There's one with a couple of drug addicts from New York, and they think if they can just get to Florida. Midnight Cowboy, they actually get to Florida, but just briefly at the end of the movie before Ratso dies. It's a sub-theme in a lot of movies that have little to do with Florida.
Yeah, Easy Rider, weren't they aiming for Florida, but never quite got here? Jim Dorsey used that in one of his novels, where he had his main character try and complete the journey.
On a recent episode about Key West, our guest brought up 92 in the Shade as a movie people should go out of their way to try and see. What did you think of that one?
That was a pretty good movie, especially because it dealt with the tourist industry and how people work in the tourist industry. And the title itself says it all, doesn't it? Because it at least deals with the fact that this is a horrifically hot and humid place. And that leads to crime, you know.
A natural segue to not just noir, but neo-noir, beginning with Body Heat.
Yeah, I love that film.
A number of reviewers pointed out that Florida was a natural for noir movies because of this dripping humidity this oppressive humidity, and noir moves from interior darkness to exterior. I just rewatched China Moon with Ed Harris, who made a number of Florida movies. Mm-hmm. And China Moon was filmed in Polk County. I would say 90% of the movie occurs at night, and it's raining. And it's got the femme fatale, the male leads that are double-crossed at least once. And it's just this oppressive heat, humidity, wetness.
The irony with Body Heat, I read this, is that while they were filming in Palm Beach, it was actually during a cold snap. And so they had to actually spray the sweat on the actors. They had to hold ice cubes in their mouths in between takes so that you wouldn't see their breath when they were actually delivering the dialogue.
Oh my God.
At least they made the effort. The movies, yes, from the 30s and 40s, even the 50s, are hysterical. Nobody ever sweats.
Yeah.
Even when it's filmed in Florida.
One of the films that holds up too, I think, is the Marx Brothers of Coconuts.
Oh yeah.
Because, you know, all of his riffs on selling real estate, they really work even in 2021.
It's an example of a film where they never set foot in Florida. It was all done on a soundstage in New York City, but it is hysterical. And I watched it. It's 1929, one of the first talkies. And I watched it to get some of Groucho's, who's the real estate huckster. And I kept, I guess, VHS. And I kept playing it and replaying it because the dialogue makes no sense. And you're trying to figure out where he talks about a pair. You don't know whether it's a P-E-A-R or P-A-I-R. And it's just nonsensical, but hysterical.
Oh, yeah. And the dialogue is stucco. So rapid, it's hard to keep up with it. Yeah.
Oh, well, you get stucco.
Yes. Yes. When one of the customers asks him, can you get stucco? And one of the houses, he says, oh, how you can get stucco.
Maybe the most famous Florida actor, and correct me if I'm wrong, would be Burt Reynolds and The Longest Yard, the original Citrus State Prison. What is Burt Reynolds' role in Florida cinema in your estimation?
By living in Florida, he was interested in promoting Florida film too. And I think one of the last ones he did that's really a pretty good film is called The Crew. Have you seen that?
I've not even heard of it.
It's early 2000s.
And it's a bunch of wise guys who have retired to Florida, or South Beach, and somebody wants to gentrify their neighborhood. And they decide to kind of reprise their old roles as wise guys. And so they have all these schemes, illegitimate schemes, to take down various people in the community. And all of them fail. They're just complete disasters of all of it. And they've all got all these physical problems that I don't want to get into that are contributing to their problems. He's a star in that film, and he does a very good job as a doddering old retiree, you know, just really upset at everybody.
He was really good in Striptease, too, which was based on a Carl Hyacin novel. Yeah.
He's good. It's a terrible movie.
But no, it's not a great movie, but he gives a great performance as this really weird politician.
Yeah. But I say it's a bad movie. Hyacin once said, when asked about Striptease, said that turning a novel over to Hollywood to make a movie is like turning your child over to a child predator.
Lord. But now there was one good movie made out of a Hyacin novel. It was Hoot, I think.
Yes, which is really was a kid's book, yeah.
And the movie's pretty faithful to that. Believe it or not, we had my kid's Boy Scout trip, we used that movie in teaching the citizenship and the community merit badge. And as an alternate, follow that dream. So we're...
And you can't mention Hyacin without mentioning Dave Barry.
Yes.
And Big Trouble is a very funny movie about a lot of Florida characters, including one that might even be described as Florida man, Jason Lee, living as a homeless guy in a tree in a wealthy neighborhood of Miami.
And that one just came out at the wrong time. It came out right after 9/11.
Yeah, I was reminded that I'd forgotten that it involved a plane and an atomic bomb and terrorists.
Yes.
And you're right. They actually, it was supposed to come out in the fall of 2001. Mm-hmm. And they postponed it to the following spring, and even that didn't help.
Well, yeah. And a movie with some similar themes, Middle Eastern terrorists, nuclear weapons, Florida, on the other side of 9/11, the right side of it, where it did almost seem, I won't say prescient in a way, but it True Lies. I was thinking more, which was a movie that really helped resuscitate Arnold Schwarzenegger's career after he had a few stinkers in a row.
I thought you were going to say, do you remember Black Sunday? Mm-hmm. It's in the 70s, and it's Super Bowl, and Palestinian, I think, terrorist or pro-Palestinian terrorist is going to blow up the Super Bowl.
And then that's one of several football movies set in Florida. The other one being Any Given Sunday, mm-hmm. right?
Biggest sports movies we found, the most common sports movies, and this will come as no surprise, despite the number of golf courses in Florida, it's not golf, which is pretty boring, especially as a spectator sport, I think, but baseball. And several of them are biographical, with Jim Pearsall and then
Fear Strikes Out,
The Rookie, Jimmy Morris, whose stage is a comeback as a 40-year-old rookie pitcher and pitches for the Devil Rays in the late 90s. And it's a name I didn't recognize.
Well, in the recent 42 Jackie Robinson movie talked about him trying to break the color barrier and going through the minor leagues and in and around Daytona, where he wasn't allowed to play. And then he was. I thought that was an interesting portrayal of the minor league side of Jackie Robinson's attempt to break the color barrier that I had not been aware of previously.
One of my favorite baseball movies is a Florida baseball movie. It was an HBO film with William Peterson and Virginia Madsen called Long Gone. The team is the Tampa Stogies.
Excited to tell you about the latest Florida company sponsoring Welcome to Florida. Eco Pathways, eco-pathways.com. What is Eco Pathways? Eco Pathways are engineered dune walkovers, boardwalks, trail bridges, docks, piers, that sort of thing. Anything you might typically use pressurized lumber for, Eco Pathways has developed a non-toxic, you know, pressurized wood has all kinds of chemicals in it, chemicals that leach into the groundwater, leach into the sand. Eco Pathways has developed a product that is engineered. It lasts far longer than pressurized lumber. It doesn't need any of the maintenance, and again, is non-toxic. To learn more, visit eco-pathways.com. If you need a dune walkover, if you need a pier, if you need a dock, if you manage a golf course and need some bridges over your ponds and water hazards and creeks, eco-pathways.com, another Florida company sponsoring the podcast.
So I've been bugging. I have actually sent emails to Turner Classics trying to get them to do a Florida movie marathon. So
what a great idea. I would like that too.
What programming would you do for a Florida movie marathon on Turner Classics?
There are a couple of really bad Ronald Reagan movies that I'd be showing.
Really?
Yeah, and one of them would surprise you. It's from 1942, and it's Ronald Reagan who goes, it's all filmed in California, but who goes to Florida where it's set and works in the tomato fields, and winds up trying to organize the farm workers.
Is this Juke Girl?
Yes.
Yes, I have actually seen that movie. Ronald Reagan as a union organizer.
Yes. And of course, he was big in Screen Actors Guild, I think, before his GE days.
Yeah. Was it Ann Sheridan, I think?
Ann Sheridan, that's right.
She was the title character, the Juke Girl at the Juke Joint.
I would definitely put a Florida Enchantment on, too. I think that deserves a wider audience because it has... It has a lot of interesting subplots in there, including the whole thing of dealing with race. In the film, you have white actors in blackface, and her maid, the lead character's maid, takes the pill. And she becomes not just masculine, she becomes aggressive. She becomes stereotypically bad woman, man, as black woman, man. So There are a lot of interesting subplots in the main plot. And it's a good example of how early films mostly dealt with tourists who were wealthy, you know, who came to Florida what they experienced.
Now, would you include either of the Tony Rome movies in there with Frank Sinatra?
Nah.
Actually, somebody we haven't talked about is Victor Nunez.
Oh, yeah.
Any of his movies. Ruby in Paradise, Yuli's Gold, Gal Yunnan.
Gal Yunnan's great film that's underplayed.
The other one that comes to mind is a John McDonald novel made into a movie.
Flash of Green.
It is fabulous. Just fabulous. As somebody, again, starring Ed Harris, somebody once said to me, Ed Harris has never made a bad film, which is not a, which is a fairly, maybe one or two, but most of his films are good. And that includes the Florida films that he was in.
Also, just for its portrayals of Florida hurricanes and veteran characters. I'm talking about people who'd been in wars. We have a lot of those people who've been in wars in Florida later. Key Largo.
Oh, yeah.
Key Largo.
Very little of which was filmed in Key Largo, but still.
It has so many interesting characters and so much to say about Florida.
And some seminal characters in it who are, as bad, but are not actually. All right, so I'm thinking we should add Body Heat and Sunshine State. I'd like to put in a plug for Gator as our Burt Reynolds representation, okay. where he's the moonshiner who goes undercover. But maybe you'd want to put in a more recent film then for the alligators and do Crawl,
yeah.
The monster alligator and the threatening people in the middle of a hurricane.
I don't know if you have seen one of the other recent films set in Florida called The Florida Project.
Oh, yeah. That got rave reviews, I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Willem Dafoe set in Kissimmee. I saw it when it came out in the theaters, and I didn't know this until I'd read a little bit more about it. It turns out that Disney was not at all happy with that film. Just didn't fit in with the image of the area. So the
happiest place on earth.
Yeah, the happiest place on earth. They have a disclaimer at the end of the film saying that this was not endorsed or supported or in any way related to any of the Disney company.
We discovered
the movie where people are living at the hotel.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. All these sort of marginalized characters basically hanging on by their fingernails on the edge of Disney.
And if you haven't been to Kissimmee lately, take a trip.
Yeah. Now, the Orlando Sentinel's done quite extensive coverage on that. Basically, that's a documentary. That's not a fictional film. I was going to say, and I think you'd have to include Moonlight, which is probably the first Florida set film to win Best Picture.
Yeah, 2016. We were thinking about movies that have come out. Our book came out in 2006, so it's been 15 years. And that we know of, there are surprisingly few Florida movies since then. Probably the most interesting is Moonlight, and then A Night in Miami, Regina King movie. And reflecting on it, it really doesn't have, except for the segregated hotel, it's not a Florida movie. Mm-hmm. It's set in Florida, but it could have been anywhere. It's a great movie, but it's not really a Florida movie. I rewatched, have either of you seen the Dennis Lehane novel, Live by Night, with Ben Affleck?
I read the book. I haven't seen the movie.
Well, the book, I love the book. I love all his books. The movie, but it's set in
the 1920s Ybor City where
early 1930s bootlegging in Ybor City. Yeah. The bootleggers are all from out of state, mostly Anglos, Irish, and Italians from Boston are running bootlegging in Tampa. The only Tampa characters are the sheriff, Chris Cooper, who is, of course, corrupt, and his brother-in-law, who's the head of a local clan, who is corrupt. Probably the most interesting thing, it's the only one of the very few films that features set in Tampa, and the owner of the local speakeasy in Ybor City is not just Cuban, but Afro-Cuban, which is kind of interesting.
That is interesting. So there's no reference to Charlie Wall at all, the guy who was the king of the underworld in Ybor in the 30s.
Okay. Or any of that, but Charlie Wall, right. The subplot is all the tunnels running under Ybor City. Yeah.
Which they now think were actually sewers.
Well, they did use tunnels for running Belita numbers. I'd like to add another film that people haven't watched but really should watch, and that's Honky Tonk Freeway.
I have seen that movie.
It's another good story about growth in Florida and a lot of odd characters that come from all over the country and wind up in Florida. Mm-hmm. And this one little town, Ticklaw, Florida, doesn't have an off ramp for the interstate. Mm-hmm. So their city is dying. So they decide to make their own off ramp and make their own tourist attraction, too.
Yeah.
So it's a very funny film.
Filmed in Sarasota. Yeah. With William Devane and Beverly D'Angelo. And I specifically remember it because the Florida DOT was going to blow up an overpass.
Yes. Why not?
And so they used that in the movie. They managed to get the cameras there and shot the DOT destroying the overpass because they were going to build a better one.
Sunshine in the Dark, Florida in the Movies is the book. You can find it on Amazon, and I will put a link to it in the show notes. Our guests have been Susan Fernandez and Bob Ingalls. Thank you both so much for your time and sharing these enjoyable stories about the Florida cinema history.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So what was your first Florida movie?
Oh my goodness. First Florida movie, maybe one of those terrible, Saturday matinee B movies, something from the Black Lagoon, or, there's a creature coming out of the water, the creature feature films. My favorite is Bad Boys with Martin Lawrence and Will Smith. That is one of my absolute guilty pleasure movies. If I'm flipping through the dials and that's on TNT, I love Tia Leone. I'm going to sit there and watch that until the end of the movie. You've mentioned Key Largo as one of your absolute favorites before.
Yep.
What else goes into your Florida Film Festival highlights?
Oh, well, definitely Creature from the Black Lagoon, which was filmed at Wakulla Springs up in the Panhandle, even though it's supposedly set in South America. In that and all the sequels, the swimming scenes involving the creature, the guy who did that was a Florida State University student who was a lifeguard. And he's still around. He's in his 80s now, but he gave an interview not too long ago where he said that the water was cold when they were filming it. So in between takes, the crew would give him shots of bourbon. And he said by about the eighth or ninth take, that was a very drunk creature swimming around. It's funny that my father-in-law grew up in Tarpon Springs, and he has very strong memories of watching them filming Beneath the 12 Mile Reef, which was a movie about sponge divers. And I told him once I felt kind of cheated because up in the Panhandle, all we have to claim is Jaws 3 in 3D, which was filmed in Navarre Beach.
Horrific. Yeah, one of the worst movies ever. Absolutely.
According to that, apparently sharks swim backwards and growl. They make growling noises.
And can somehow identify individual people and search them out from thousands of miles away. I remember Jaws 3D. That's funny because that would have been somewhere in the mid-80s. And I remember watching that on television when every once in a while on like broadcast TV, they would show something in 3D. So you had to go get the 3D glasses at like a grocery store or someplace.
Yeah.
I remember my mom and my brother and I sitting in, her bedroom in the big TV we had, the huge console, piece of furniture, wood, television, and watching Jaws 3D, and just how, again, I'm 10 years old, 9, 10, just how extraordinarily bad I thought it was at that point. And that was an awful, awful
picture. It was worse. It was worse than the Sharknado movie.
Sharknado was campy and leaned into that whole thing.
Yeah,
Jaws 3D was trying to be serious. And that is long after Richard Dreyfuss and the main characters had left that movie. I think the original wife was in that one. But yes, truly, truly terrible. And, these films have come up in previous episodes. We talked about Sunshine State and our American Beach episode. They mentioned the Kefauver Committee. We talked about that in the Tampa Mafia episode, Cross Creek, the film, Marjorie Kinnon Rawlings. So there's really more than you realize when you go. I mean, they're forgettable, but there's a lot. Yeah.
The Yearling and Cross Creek. Yearling, which was filmed in and around Silver Springs. And, we haven't even talked about Flipper, which was a movie that then became a TV show. And if you go down to the Keys, you can actually visit Flipper's grave down there. There's a big statue of Flipper in the Keys that you can visit.
One of
many fine animal related statues. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah.
There's a huge variety of films. And like they said, some treat Florida as paradise. Some treat it as a hellhole, and others, I'm not sure what classification you'd put Wild Things in. Very much a Florida movie.
It would not be a hellhole.
No, but it is a good place for noir, as they mentioned.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You bring up those Ed Harris movies. That humid, wet, muggy, notorious noir, those films really do capture that atmosphere, let's say, of everyone's cheating on everyone else, and you know, people are rolling up in the Cadillac with a pistol under the front seat, and you know, that feeling.
A sunny place for shady people. One Ed Harris movie we didn't mention is The Truman Show, which isn't really set in Florida, but was filmed in Florida in Seaside, a town up in the Panhandle.
Right, the Jim Carrey
movie. It
really
does look like that.
Yeah, where he is, his entire life is a reality show. Yeah, that was really cutting edge stuff at the time. You know, reality TV now is so pervasive, you don't think about it. But at the time, you know, that was, people were really, I won't say freaked out, but it seemed was really fresh.
Then, didn't
yeah, yeah, really fresh.